Me?
Okay,
Don't worry
Zach.
About the camera.
All right.
Anything.
Okay, that sounds good.
All right. Well, I guess let's start with, so describe the group that you're a part of and what you were, when you were formed, how you came to be, and what you're looking to do.
Okay, well, there is a group, and we call it Friends of the Yellow River, and it's an informal group, and we have just kind of got together and started talking and decided to keep communicating. And that's all it is in a way. So it's not an organization with officers or a treasury. We don't vote on things. We just keep each other informed, informed about the issues protecting the environment. And a lot of the impetus was because of the Bend deposit mine exploration. But we're really paying attention to the environment in a bigger sense, because there's forestry projects up there as well, and things that affect the wildlife and the environment. And it's an important area. It's 80% of the water flow to a big recreational area. We call it the Miller Dam area, the Shawamigan flowage. And we just keep communicating. We have a lot of different viewpoints, but we don't vote on things. People independently contact the mining company, the DNR, etc.
So when did the group coalesce?
It's about 2 years ago.
Okay. And was it directly related to the green light metals and the exploration, or was it kind of just, how did that percolate up at that time?
No, that's how it started. I mean, people knew that there's exploratory mining activity starting there. And so people concerned about the environment, local people, some literally in their backyard and others in the county here, mm-hmm. wanted to be proactive and protect that area.
So does the group have a stance on the exploratory drilling, pro or con, or?
Well, in some ways, the group does not. There's a variety of opinions in the group. Some are not in my backyard type of attitude, and not in my state. And some of us are just trying to be sure if there's activity up there that it's monitored closely, so mistakes are less likely to happen, maybe more for responsible mining than we are opposed to it or against or in favor of it.
Mm-hmm. And how have you found Greenlight to work with in terms of being open and communicating what's going on, what their intents are with the project?
Yeah, it's been sometimes a challenge, really, frankly. Sometimes they have not gotten back to us very quickly. But on the other hand, they've been very open for the most part, welcoming us to come by and snoop around and see what they're doing, answer most of our questions that we have. But the Greenlight company got off on a bad foot, I think, a couple years ago when the CEO of the company, Matt Philgate, stated to the stockholders that there's no water concerns 4 miles down from where we're mining, but they were wanting to draw water out of the North Fork of the Yellow River there. So it was a little bit puzzling, and I think we got a lot of that straightened out. And so overall, they're good to work with, but there's been a few snags here and there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When it comes to the concerns, do you think that there are federal and state rules that are strong enough to protect the Yellow River? If the mining company does everything up to the extent of what they're permitted to do?
Well, that's a really good question. And I think we're really eroding those regulations, especially at the federal level. I mean, for example, there's endangered resources, some species we're watching really closely and going out there and looking at them and saying, wow, this is dangerous what they're doing here for these endangered threatened species. And meanwhile, at the federal level, they're cutting the funding, so they aren't even doing surveys to see if they're there or not anymore. It's drastically cut back. Same with water concerns. There's a steady erosion, I would say, of the regulations that are, don't pay attention to small pools of water. These small pools of water in the area are important to the ecosystem. You know, they're scattered throughout that area. The Wisconsin DNR has been doing their job and catching some of these things. When they first started to explore the area, they had designated where the water concerns are. Then we had a wet season, and they're on top of it, and they identified some wet areas that had not been identified before, and they had to change the mining plans last summer, kind of right in the middle of the season. So you could look at that as alarming, but I also think it was a success because the DNR was on top of that.
Mm-hmm. And, Do you think, or does your group feel that mining can be done safely in this area without threatening the water?
Well, I think that there's some people in our group that think it's impossible. I think it's really difficult myself, and I guess if it has to be done, we want to be as careful as possible. It's kind of ironic because in some areas of the country, there's very little water, and they say because we have so little water and mining requires water and we could contaminate the little water we have, we wish mining was done in a place that had more water, not in this arid area. So it's hard to find a totally safe place. I don't think there is such a thing. Here we have a lot of water concerns, and right now I think they're maybe not being adequately addressed, and we're trying to see if the regulators can be more careful than they are.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there's kind of two basic scenarios. There's one of, if they do everything right, is there still some damage to the environment? Or mm-hmm. if there's an accident, what is the catastrophic fallout that could come from that?
Yeah. I mean, both areas are a big concern. You cannot do any kind of activity without some pollution, and so it has to be controlled. I mean, it's just the way it is. Copper mining, for example, is 6,000 years old in this area, and the evidence of the copper mining is from the pollution left over 6,000 years ago. Some amazing scientific articles. We're not going to avoid pollution, but we can do. We need stronger regulations than we have. And as far as disasters, I'm a little bit optimistic myself. Some people are not. I understand that we can avoid the big tailing dam failings and so forth. I just went by a site that 45 years ago wiped out a whole town of 300 people. And 10 of the mining company engineers and CEOs went to jail. So nobody wants that. I think in the last 40 years, there's been improvements. So I'm just, myself, a little bit optimistic we can avoid a big catastrophe. But pollution is always going to be a problem.
Mm-hmm. When you think of where this deposit's located, it's in the ceded territory. So yep. The tribes have rights here. Yep. It's in a national forest.
Exactly.
It's in a watershed with a threatened species and a valuable watershed for its natural resources and recreation. I mean, mm-hmm. do you think that there should be any mining here at all, given the location and all the other competing aspects of that?
Well, I think there should not be mining in this area for a lot of those reasons. That's my personal opinion, and I think many of the Friends of the Yellow River would feel that way. If the law and regulations are say it's going to be here, we're going to have to be on top of it as much as we can to prevent damage. But you mentioned the ceded territory and the American Indian tribes that ceded that territory. The current law is that they have to be consulted, and then what? Ignored. The law needs to be changed. You know, they have their equivalent to the DNR. and but they have no real power, it seems, or the courts overrule them, or could overrule them. So that's one of the issues, and being in a national forest near threatened species. I'm not against mining in the entire state of Wisconsin, but you know, it's not a good place to do it at the Bend deposit. No.
When you hear there's a few different traditional arguments supporting mining in Wisconsin, and mm-hmm. one of them is, you know, it was a miner on the flag. It's part of our state's heritage.
Yeah.
What's your response to that one?
Well, I think we need to have mining. Even the Amish need to have the metals that they need. You know, we're not going to go back to the Stone Ages. So I support the idea of having mining somewhere, somehow. But it's just simply one of those things that we have to control. But I don't think this is a good place for it, for reasons we just talked about. And if it has to happen, it has to be really monitored closely.
One of the newer arguments that they're bringing forward is this is about national security, that there's mm-hmm. so many precious metals down there that instead of having to go through China or get them from Africa or some other place, we should be securing that for here.
Yeah, I think they're looking for a lot of reasons, political reasons, to make it sound better, because there's a lot of rare earth and other metals in Sweden and Peru, and you know, it's a global market, it's not really there's actually quite a bit of mining in other parts of the country here in the U.S. too. So you know, Canada is another place. You know, of course, Canada, some people regard that as like China, I guess, nowadays, but I really think it's you know, it's a global question, and it's very complicated.
So another thing that's really interesting about the timing of this is Tom Tiffany sponsored and helped write the bill that changed Wisconsin's mining laws to make this even theoretically possible.
Mm-hmm.
He's under the old law. It really wasn't ever going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
He's now running for governor.
Mm-hmm.
What does that bring to this race or to this topic at this time? Does that heighten all the things around it, that, you know, one of the lead sponsors of this that created the environment to allow this to happen and make it realistic is now running to be the top agent of the state, and obviously he would be gung-ho to see mining here.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a kind of a out of control type of approach to mining. You know, Tom Tiffany is from northern Wisconsin, where all this hunting and fishing and recreation happen that he supposedly supports, and then to risk all of that, you know, by weakening the laws. I think we have mining and probably forestry laws as well, environmental laws that need strengthening at this point in time. I don't think Tom Tiffany is one that's going to head us in that direction.
When I interviewed all of the Democratic candidates for governor last December, and I asked each of them about mining and about the Bend deposit specifically, and
mm-hmm.
I got a lot of blank stares. I got a lot of reactions. How much, outside of this immediate area, how much do people know that this is happening, that this is back on the radar here?
I don't know how much they know, and I think it's good that public media here is covering it. It's an important issue. Some people say that because it's just exploratory mining that, it doesn't matter much. And until a real mine comes, then we'll start to worry about it. But I think there's water issues. One of these endangered species we've been keeping an eye on, I don't know if it's going to be there next summer or the summer after. The activities with the increased road traffic and so forth, I mean, I've seen you know, dangerous situations already, and you know, for the breeding habitat and so forth, I think it's something to be concerned about now, and it should be a political issue. I understand the politicians trying to cover both sides of all issues, but you know, sustainability is something I wish politicians would talk about. You know, for that would make sense. You know, we can have some mining in the state, to go back to basically a moratorium on all mining is probably not going to be politically popular, I don't think. But we need politicians to lead the way and have stronger environmental laws, for sure.
How much of this is known even around here immediately? I mean, there's small communities and there's pockets of communities, but this is still happening out in a very rural, isolated area. Is it well known locally that this is happening, or is it still like you run into people and you're like, oh, hey, did you know this is going on?
Well, our local paper, the Star News, and the Green Light Metals is putting on some meetings, but of course they're not talking too much about the environmental hazards. So I guess we're going to have to try to make some effort. We've been a private little group ourselves, but I think it might be up to the media and up to people like us to make people more aware. I think we need to do that.
Do you think there are people, especially considering the political environment we're in, that are willing to listen, or will this fall into the my side, your side kind of camp?
That's a good question, but I don't have a good answer. I must say, I don't know. We have to just keep trying, trying to educate. What
do you think is the benefit of your group coming to exist in the first place? I mean, is this something that even if, the Bend deposit could fizzle out on its own entirely? I mean, it's been looked at 100 times over the past half century, and it's been found to be non-economically viable. If that happens again, will your group still like find other things to exist, or will you kind of stand down because that one's gone for now?
Well, I think it's made us environmentally aware of the of this area, and there's forestry projects and other projects, and I'm hoping that there be continued efforts to protect the environment. There's always going to be challenges. I'm hoping the group continues to educate each other and work on issues, whatever they are. One of the things that make me proud of the group is that we just are existing and making the DNR and other people aware. I know in previous mine, the last mine in Wisconsin, in Ladysmith, the complaint there from the environmentalists is that Stream C, it was contaminated. Well, it turns out that nobody even knew Stream C was there because it was so dry that when they did the original inspection. And there were no friends of Stream C. There are friends of the Yellow River. So just awareness is important.
You said right now it's a private group and you're kind of keeping each other aware.
Yeah.
Do you think that will change as this goes on, that it'll be time to be public, and even if there's people that may not agree with you, it's time to engage outside of just the like-minded people and reach a broader audience?
Well, I don't know. That'll be up to people in the group. I think other groups like the Sierra Club and the River Alliance are public groups, and they may take the lead at more of a statewide basis of awareness. Same with the Great Lakes Indian Fish and Wildlife Service, Wisconsin Greenpeace. So there's several public groups. I kind of like being kind of a smaller group that just informs each other, but we'll see.
Are you going to be at there's a meeting, I think, Monday night at a local township?
Yeah, I think Wednesday night right here in town.
Yeah, there'll be a larger one Wednesday.
Yeah. But I don't know about the ones at the townships. And that'd probably be good for, we need to discuss that as our own group, if anybody would go to these other meetings. I hope the townships are aware. We don't need, with the challenges in the environment, concerned about the townships doing road improvements and all kinds of things that in a sensitive environment.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's interesting because that townships, like how much of this is about presence, like having people that may come to that meeting to learn more if they only hear from Green Light Metals,
Mm-hmm.
And they just hear all the positive things, yeah, or how safe they are. Like, how much of it is there an onus on you guys, whether you like it or not, to,
yeah,
like, to be a presence, to say, well, you know, this is the other point of view.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think there is an onus on us to speak up at meetings. And we've tried to do a little of that. There was a meeting last summer, and they had difficulty with their microphones and so forth, so the pointed environmental questions, nobody could hardly hear them. It was supposed to be a town hall meeting, and it was difficult to communicate. The communication was pretty much from Greenlight Metals about the wonderful jobs and how much valuable minerals there are, and that was the gist of the meeting. So we need to come to those meetings and speak up.
Well, if there was a question that you would want asked of Greenlight, what would you want asked?
In the environmental resource review, there were I think about 5 different species, plant and animal, that were threatened, and they had one required action that they were supposed to do to protect them. And they had about 3 or 4 recommended actions. And then in the permit, they say, you're required to do this. And I'd like to ask them in public, are you doing any of the recommended actions to protect threatened species, or are you only doing the minimum requirements? As far as I can see, they have just doing the minimum needed. And there's certain things they could do to protect these species, and they're making efforts beyond what they're required.
Mm-hmm. One of the things when I've talked to them that they've said is that they're trying a new approach as a mining company to be more transparent,
mm-hmm,
to hold a town hall when they may not have to, allow people to come onto the site, invite,
mm-hmm,
groups out to look and try and present a more Wisconsin-focused face instead of a foreign national face. And,
mm-hmm,
That they say they're trying to learn from the mistakes of past efforts, where they have,
mm-hmm,
isolated and turned off the locals by not being open and making it sound scarier and more threatening. Do you think they've done that? Have they fulfilled that? And is there can they lull people,
mm-hmm,
past the concerns by being like, oh, we're from Wisconsin, this is our backyard too,
mm-hmm,
and look how honest we're being,
yeah,
and downplaying the same concerns that exist?
Yeah. It's obvious to me they're making efforts in that direction. And it'll be interesting to see in future meetings how that pans out. But I'm concerned that they're making efforts as a PR ploy and not as sincere as I would have hoped. But maybe I'm wrong, and we'll continue to work with them. There's been communication with them. I've talked to Steve Donahue, who is the local representative, and they've made some effort, but sometimes just, well, I'll get back to you later, and then we don't hear anything,
mm-hmm,
too. So
I'm sure you heard, but the cores that they sampled that they brought up last summer, I mean, they found gold, like visible,
mm-hmm,
flecks of gold, which they said were actually quite rare. I mean, as they find more and more things in these cores that have more value, does that just heighten the stakes?
Well, maybe for them. I guess for the mining company, the something like 25-30% of the expense is with permitting and reclamation and environmental concerns. And so it makes it more profitable for them, the more things they find there. My concern is about the environment, and I don't care if their stockholders make money or not, as long as the environment's protected.
But would you feel better if they weren't finding all that valuable stuff down there, like, and then less incentive to try and go down and get it in the first place?
Well, it'd be better for this sensitive area if they didn't mine. Yeah. So if economics mean that they don't, but at the national level, there's all kinds of things they can do to help incentivize mining.
Mm-hmm.
They can provide grants. They can do all kinds of things, change the economics. That's not in my control.
Yeah. You mentioned some of the threatened and endangered species. Can you just list off a few that we're talking about?
Well, it's really interesting because threatened species are redacted in the reports. And as environmental people up there, you know, with our boots on the ground, so to speak, we figured out what they are, and we're watching them closely, but it's not for public information. Just think if they published where the bald eagle nests were or whatever, you know, then you're going to have the possibility of people shooting them, capturing certain species for pets, or even just nature observers like us bothering their breeding. So they just don't allow sharing that information. One species that I can talk about are the river mussels, because none of them are endangered, so we can name them off. There's the Three Ridge and others up there. And they're fascinating, and they're, there's quite a few in that area. And they are cleaning the water and making the water clean downstream and down through the flowages and so forth where all the recreation is. So, the others I'm not allowed to speak of. It makes it hard to protect them sometimes.
It feels at odds with trying to inform the public of why something needs to be saved to protect when people don't know. I mean, you hear the stories about, oh, it's one owl or it's this one snail.
Yeah.
Everyone shrugs their shoulders. But if it is like bald eagles or something that people find more value in as a species, there's a different collective sense of worthiness there.
Yeah, there certainly is. And I think what people have to realize is that ecosystems are complex systems, and if you find it a challenge to a threatened species, you're protecting an environment and an ecosystem. You're not just protecting one owl. You're protecting a whole system, and the parts are critical to the operation of a complex system. So. It doesn't matter if it's a little snail or an insect or what, if the environment is protected, it's going to stay whole and function better.
When you're trying to pitch this to the public and get people to care, is it easier to tell them, like, well, Miller Dam, all the fish are going to die if there's a sulfide leak? Or, you know, you won't be safe to go in the river and use it for your own uses. There's almost like two different messages, and one to sell the average public who may not care whether they should or not about, you know, the individual species versus those that already care about them. They could be persuaded with this message, but the one over here about, you can't go out in the water.
Yeah, well, that's true. You know, in mining, there's the potential of leaking mercury, arsenic, and so forth. And we can talk to the public about the warnings about how many fish meals you can eat because of the mercury in the fish. And that's an easier salesmanship job to the general public, for sure. But it's also true, you know, that's a challenge. We start polluting the environment. The interesting thing is that the rivers, like the North Fork of the Yellow River, will clean themselves chemically as you go downstream because they're being filtered by the bed of the river, just like a septic system, you know, so the water gets cleaner. But these toxic metals and things enter the food chain. So there's been mining operations in South America where they've discovered mercury 1,000 miles away in penguin feathers because these toxic metals have entered the food chain. It's not just a simple water equation. And so people can be convinced, maybe, because it'll catch. It'll affect me when I'm out there fishing. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Anything else you want to add along these lines?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
Thank you.
I get you to say and spell your name, just so I have it correct?
Sure. It's Scott Stahlheim, with two T's, and Scott, Stahlheim.
All right, and you are with Friends of the Yellow River?
Yeah. Yeah, help coordinate the messages and the emails and so forth. And there's a Facebook page, too.
About how many members do you have?
About 35.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you.
Okay.
What we were telling Kathy before is what we